solar nazis sobre o meu resume.
Hey, welcome back, Screen Crush. I'm Ryan Airy, and we're going to talk about the finale of Season 2 of House of the Dragon and how this sets up Season 3, and we're going to explain Daemon's vision in detail. A little later, I'm going to be joined by Darren Robinson and Brianna McLarty, and we're going to break down all the different players in the war, some key characters that are missing from the book, and they're going to help me break down that vision. Also, I think that the aftermath of that vision is setting us up for a huge cameo from the original series that could also be setting up a sequel series that takes place after Game of Thrones. And before we get rolling, I want to thank you guys for watching our House of the Dragon videos all season long. We've had a blast watching the show with you guys, and most especially thank you for shopping our merch store where we design all the parody merch ourselves. Right now we have this new epic Hammer and Fury shirt commemorating everybody's favorite bastard on Dragonback. We have the Team Green and Team Black baseball tees, forget about the Iron Fleet RPG shirt, and the Battle of the Twins shirt to commemorate their epic fight. Shopping our merch store is the best way to support our channel so we can keep making videos like this one. The links are in the description. Now, I've seen some complaints in the comments the show is moving too slowly. After all, they did spent a season laying the groundwork for war and then another season trying to avoid war. And now that the war is coming, you may be confused about all the players and what the hell Daemon's vision is actually about.
Yeah, why did Daemon see Daenerys? And what does Alys have to do with all this?
Well, don't worry, I am going to explain Alys Rivers because we have to understand Alys before we can understand the vision in detail. First, we have to explain the setup for this vision because it's important that you know exactly how Daemon was able to see the future and the Long Night. So remember, Daemon started off this season as the same old spoiled brat that he was in season one. He had flashes where he was selfless, like when he crowned Rhaenyra, but otherwise he was still the little brother who lusted after his brother's throne. He's continuously proven to be bad at diplomacy and then been embarrassed by his failures. And in this, he is a lot like Aemon. After all, their names are anagrams of one another's. Daemon and Aemon are alike in many ways. For instance, they're both willing to sacrifice their families to achieve their own ambitions. So all season long, Alys has been trying to get Daemon into the proper state of mind to wage this war. She has been casting spells on him in order to break him down emotionally. First, she makes him relive some of his key memories, and also shows him how he could have been a better man along the way, such as, instead of bragging that his nephew is dead, he could have consoled his brother when he was by his dead wife's side. All of this prepares Daemon to receive this final message, which is a glimpse of the future that we've already seen play out in Game of Thrones.
Okay, so who is Alys?
And that's where it gets really good, Doug. In the book, it's just said that Alys is a witch and that she's rumored to be hundreds of years old. Several Easter egg videos ago, we theorized that she could have a connection to the Children of the Forest, and the Children of the Forest have a very interesting history that is key to understanding the entire saga of the story.
Why, hello there! Here's your ball of cat hair.
What? Why did you bring me a ball of cat hair?
Well, because you're one of our subscribers. Actually, you're our only subscriber. There's a picture of you on our wall.
I did not subscribe to Ball of Cat Hair Monthly. You know what? I'm going to check my Rocket Money, and yes, it turns out I accidentally did subscribe to this service. But now I can cancel that subscription through Rocket Money.
Oh, geez. Person, what's Rocket Money? Are you going to space? I will miss you, person.
No, buddy. Rocket Money is a mobile app that helps you save more and spend less. It's a personal finance manager that lets you manage your subscriptions, lower your bills, check your credit score, and plan for your financial future.
Gee whiz, it's got all that in one app?
Yes, it is very easy to use. I input my financial details and then found out I was spending so much money on subscription services that I totally forgot about. Like, this used to happen to me all the time. We would cover a show that was on a certain streaming service, so I would subscribe to that service and then I would forget to cancel. Or I would subscribe to some app that we needed to use and then forget to cancel that. Rocket Money helped me to save almost $100 a month on apps and services that I never even used or that I accidentally subscribed to twice. But Rocket Money also helps you budget your spending. It helps you to analyze your spending habits to create a custom budget that works with your lifestyle. And it gives you notifications when you've exceeded your limits, and you can also easily track your credit score. Rocket Money is free to download, but I personally recommend the premium plan, which helps you budget by syncing your account balances, create custom spending categories, unlimited budget, smart savings, premium chat, and many more features. People save up to $740 a year when they use all of Rocket Money's features. So, to save more and spend less, join the over 5 million members using Rocket Money today. Go to rocketmoney.com/screencrush or click the link in the description to get started for free. Guys, this is one of my all-time favorite apps. I use it all the time, and it's one of the all-time best sponsors that we talk about on this channel. Go to rocketmoney.com/screencrush to get started today. So back to the Children of the Forest. They are are the original inhabitants of Westeros. When the first men came to Westeros, they made peace with them, and even adopted the religion of the Children of the Forest, which involved the worship of weirwood trees. The weirwood trees, you know, the white trees we see in the God's Woods of Game of Thrones, allow green seers to see all of the past and future history.
What's a green seer?
Well, a green seer is like Bran in Game of Thrones. You see, about 1 in 1,000 people in Westeros are born as what's called a skin changer, or, you know, people who can put their minds into animals. But about 1 in 1,000 skin changers are green seers, and a green seer can see the future. And, for what we can tell, there is always one green seer who is known as the Three-Eyed Raven, and the Three-Eyed Raven is the repository of all knowledge and history in Westeros. In the original series, Bran becomes the Three-Eyed Raven. Now, we do see the Three-Eyed Raven in Daemon's Vision, which we'll explain in just a bit. The point is that when the Andals came into Westeros, they waged war against the Children of the Forest and burned down their weirwood trees. And, in a flashback in Game of Thrones, we see the Children of the Forest cast a spell on one of these men to create the White Walkers. So the White Walkers were intended to be used as a weapon against men, but then they went out of control and nearly destroyed everyone in Westeros. So, if Alice has a connection to the Children of the Forest, then her end goal would be to stop the Long Night from coming, to undo the damage the Children of the Forest have done. But I should also note that the Targaryens also have the gift of prophecy. The only reason they even came to Westeros is because Daenys the Dreamer had a vision of the Doom of Valyria. Aegon also had a vision of the Long Night, which led to him conquering Westeros.
Aegon foresaw the end of the world of men. It is to begin with a terrible winter.
Daenerys had a vision of herself in the throne room, which paid off in the final episode of the show. And of course, Daemon is given a glimpse of the future in this episode. But we also see that Helaena has visions of the future, even predicting that Aemon would lose an eye.
You will have a dragon one day.
He'll have to close an eye.
And Helaena is connected to that really awesome cameo that I think we're going to see that connects to the original series. But this vision is specifically catered to Daemon. Now, instead of trying to control his own fate, he sees the role that he is meant to play in the story. This war is what leads to the dragons dying out, which eventually leads to Daenerys being exiled and her three dragons hatching, which leads to Jon uniting the realm and defeating the White Walkers. But I still have some questions about the vision and the war to come. So that's all the background on the visions, but I still have a lot of questions about the visions, the war to come, and some pretty key differences from the book. So, to help me out with those, I have on our very own Brianna McLarty, who's written all of our House of the Dragon Easter egg videos, and Game of Thrones scholar Darren Robinson, and also Second City understudy. So, guys, first of all, I want to talk about nettles. So, nettles is a character who, you know, we see Sheepstealer in this episode. It looks like Rhaena's going to get Sheepstealer, but in the book, it's a character called Nettles. Darren, would you like to tell me, you know, who Nettles is in the book and why you think maybe we're not going to get her in the show?
So Nettles is a character who was in the book. She's described as a brown girl with dark hair who claims this brown dragon Sheepstealer. And she claims Sheepstealer really through her wits alone. She takes sheep to the dragon every single day and is very consistent with it. Much like you would train a horse where you're consistent with the animal, bring it food and water every single day, then it trusts you and then you're able to ride. That's what she does with Sheepstealer. And then Daemon recruits her over to Rhaenyra's side to help fight with the Black. A couple reasons why I feel like they cut Nettles. One is because I think it creates a more satisfying arc for Rhaena to claim a dragon. We've seen from season one, as a kid, her dragon egg never hatched. And then finally, when her mother died and she thought she would claim Vhagar, Aemon claimed Vhagar. And throughout her life, she's felt kind of sidelined and jealous of Baela, her sister, who has a dragon, Moondancer, who she can ride, and feeling just like she wants to help more in this battle. And being unable to because she doesn't have a dragon. So I think it's great that she's able to do that. And it's a good thing for Rhaena. Two, the other reason why I feel like they cut Nettles is because this season spent so much time kind of giving a redemption arc for Daemon's character and really bringing him back into the fold. He starts the season by kind of going off on his own, going to Harrenhal. He has all these visions. He experiences all this regret and remorse over the people in his life that he's lost, his mother, his brother, his former wife, Lena, and even the way he's treated Rhaenyra up to this point. And so I think for him to have that character arc is very powerful. And in the book, Daemon and Nettles have a relationship, a romantic and sexual relationship. Also, Nettles is 16 in the book.
Yeah, it gets pretty creepy.
It does. It does. And I think they really just wanted to avoid the adultery of it all and the pedophilia of it all and to give Daemon that wonderful character arc that he needs before going into this war.
Yeah, and of course, the end of that character arc is his vision, which I'm going to break down with you guys in just a bit. First, Brianna, I'm not clear on one thing. Why did the Mistress of the Veil kick Reyna out? Is it because they only brought these two small dragons?
I think it's that. I think she's pretty isolationist. The Veil tends to be isolationist. And she did decide to side with Rhaenyra, but it was conditional because she was really mad that Daemon killed Rhea Royce because she was very close friends with her. And I think she probably just thought it would be better for them to be in Pentos. However, I did kind of feel like when she turned away, she knew that Rhaena was going to run for that dragon because she like watched Rhaena sort of pause, look back at her, and then she just turned her back, which made me think, okay, she's kind of like willfully turning a blind eye because she knows if anyone can claim that dragon, it's going to be Rhaena. And they want a dragon because they are scared of Vhagar.
Yeah, and like Darren said, it is a great arc for her. And Rhaena, you know, in the book, goes on to do some interesting things. But as far as like in this war, you know, if she ends up with Daemon, they're in the same region, then it doesn't give Daemon that relationship, romantic relationship. God, I hope not. But what it does give him is time with his daughter. And he has neglected his daughters since, you know, his wife, really before his wife died, he's never been that interested in them.
And Lena in the vision specifically says, like, have you checked on our girls? So that would also tie that together.
Yeah. And like I said, the visions are very true to Game of Thrones and to the books, but we'll get to that in a second. First, I want to talk about somebody I think who watched this episode sees all of these different people suiting up and the people sailing from Essos, and maybe it can get a little bit confusing for certain people. Like, okay, so where are we? Who is where? What is happening? Who are these sides? So if you can, I just want to break down like the different elements of this war and talk about, so, you know, why everybody is suiting up. First of all, let's start with the Valyrian fleet. They've already had initiated a blockade of King's Landing that's very successful. So they've cut them off from all this food. Why in this episode are they armoring up, suiting up, and sending out more warships than they were before?
It's because they know that they can't hold that blockade forever. And they know that eventually the Greens are going to retaliate against that blockade. They probably figure that the Greens are specifically reaching out to the Greyjoys. In fact, they mentioned the Greyjoys.
Because the Lannisters have a good fleet too. They have to, because the Lannisters are right next to the Iron Islands. Sorry to cut you off.
Exactly. So you have these like two very strong navies, but the Valyrians are much stronger. However, the Triarchy's navy is, I mean, they fought over the Stepstones for years. Right. So they're actually not preparing to go fight with the Triarchy because there is no way they would think they would ally with the Triarchy. They're like incredibly untrustworthy. And obviously the Stepstones have been a battleground for a very long time. They're preparing for the Greyjoys and the Lannisters, and they just think they have it in the bag.
Gotcha. Now the Triarchy in the book, it's described as like being ruled by, I think, 33 different lords. I pictured in the book a giant triangular table with all these guys shouting at it. I love how they showed the Triarchy in this show, in this episode, with, you know, Brianna, you did such a great job in the Easter egg video that we had out yesterday where you talked about the different styles and how you can tell this person's from here, the blue beard. Like, that was fantastic. It's a really cool element to see them portrayed there and to see how their different culture works and how they don't command this person who's in charge of these ships. You know, Tyland has to prove himself in battle. Awesome side quest. So I'm down with that. The Triarchy, the Stepstones, we know the Triarchy eventually collapses because they're not around in Game of Thrones, but now they're a naval force to be reckoned with. So that's the Narrow Sea. Mm-hmm. I guess the Greyjoys also committed to the Greens at some point?
No, the Greyjoys are undecided. They mention that maybe they could, you know, sell Alicent off to the Red Kraken.
And she was like, absolutely not at the Green Council. Yeah, she was like, that's out of the question.
So Aemond threw a little hissy fit and he burned a whole town. Sharppoint. Where is Sharppoint at in relation to Dragonstone?
So Sharppoint is in the Crownlands. So it's in the same region as King's Landing. I think it's more closer to the coast. And so that's why he burned it. I mean, he was on his way to Dragonstone, saw Rhaenyra and the Three Dragons, got upset, came back to the Crownlands and just burned Sharppoint. Yeah, they're Bar Emmon, which is the minor house, but they were supporting the Blacks, and so he just burned them. Also, just like the fact that he's burning innocent people is just not a good thing, and it's a sign, as Alicent says, that he's just not mature enough for this and is not a good leader, and he's going to bring them all to ruin.
But then again, he's burning innocent people. And we have this great moment at the dinner table where Rhaenyra says, we're going to burn innocent people. And she just expects these small folk to go, oh yeah, totally makes sense. Knowing that it's going to be their friends and families who might get, you know, annihilated by these dragons. So then Daemon has gathered all these different river lords together at Harrenhal. It's a massive host. Kristen Cole doesn't really have any fight left in him at this point. So what's going on with Sir Criston's forces? Like, are they still, does he still have an army? Is he still going around the Riverlands, Darren? Like, what the hell's going on with him? Who's Daemon actually going to be fighting?
Yeah, so Kristen Cole is marching on the Riverlands with Gawain Hightower, who's Alicent's brother. And then the idea is that Aemon and Vhagar will fly from King's Landing to the Riverlands to meet up with the army to fight against Daemon and the Riverlords.
Okay. So they're still out there, though. How do they still have a large force, or did the battle with the Battle of Rook's Rest, did that like decimate who they have? Because there's also the Reach, which I'll talk about in a second. So at this point, does Daemon have superiority in numbers over Kristen Cole?
I think maybe at this point, but the Hightowers are also marching towards them. So they've got the Hightowers marching. They've got the Leffords and the Lannisters marching from the west over the River Road, I believe, which is the one that separates the Riverlands and the Westlands. And so there are more Greens coming from the west and from the Reach to help with Kristen Cole's numbers. So even if they did lose a lot of people at Rook's Rest, they still won that battle, and they still have more forces coming who are closer.
Now, Brianna, speaking of the Hightowers, one thing I wish we had in this season, and I get it, it's only 8 episodes, dragons are expensive. We keep hearing about, the Reach is in rebellion, and there's fighting going on over there. We saw Otto Hightower in a cell at the end of this episode. So what's going on in the Reach that might be slowing down the Hightower's progress? Because remember, guys, Westeros is the size of South America. So it's going to take everybody a while to get to where they're going. Brianna, what's going on in the Reach right now?
Okay, so there are a few things going on. The first is House Beesbury. So Beesbury was the lord of, or commander of Lost. Sir Criston Cole just straight up murked him in episode 9. He was the one that he just like head slammed and just took him out.
Well, I have no part.
So the Beesburys are really angry about that. And they're a fairly powerful house. The other thing is that Highgarden, they originally allied with the Greens because they didn't want their smaller house to like look more powerful than them or look like they were going against them. But eventually they ended up going neutral because there was just so much civil war happening between the Beesburys and everybody else. And probably because they could make a lot of money. It's never outright said, but they can sell food to both sides and make a lot of money.
I think you pointed this out either in one of these videos or in our Easter egg video, that no matter what, people need the Hightowers. They need the food. So they can't afford to be neutral and play both sides and jack up prices of grain too while they're at it.
Yes,
because there's a blockade on King's Landing where the fishermen can't get in. So they're not really getting any food from the sea. So they have to get it from the land.
I got to tell you guys, if I were to live in Westeros, why would you not live anywhere but Dorne? Dorne just seems like the ultimate place to be. And the last group we see coming down across the Twins are the Starks of Winterfell and all those northern houses. There's a lot of graybeards in there, you know, like Cregan said, but they're coming down too. So when can we expect them to actually join the fight?
They're closer. They're coming closer now. Because the Freys, who own the Twins, are vassal lords underneath the Tullys. So they are crossing now from the north into the Riverlands. So they are getting closer.
That makes sense. That all lines up. If you guys still have any questions about the war, or if we've misspoke and called a house by the wrong name, let us know in the comments. Darren, real quick, before we move on to the vision, what's your social? Where can people find you?
At Darren_2Dream. And I'm on Instagram.
Yay. Okay. All those links are below. Brianna, how about you?
Brianna T. McClarty. I'm on Instagram and on TikTok.
Awesome. So all those hip things that I never go on. All right. So now I want to break down the vision. Earlier, we talked about everything leading up to the vision. We gave context for it. We talked about it in our Easter egg video. There's a few things I think we could go into a little bit more depth now that the three of us are here. So let's go ahead and start looking at some stills from this vision. And let's just kind of look, and you guys can explain, and we'll explain to the people watching what exactly we're looking at. So our first still, this is, as we said in our Easter egg video, the Three-Eyed Raven looks very similar to Max von Sydow in Game of Thrones. So what are you guys seeing here? Is this where we saw the Three-Eyed Raven originally? Who even is the Three-Eyed Raven?
Well, they don't name him in the Game of Thrones TV show series, but there's speculation that he's Brendan Rivers, who is a bastard, Targaryen bastard of Aegon IV, who was Aegon the Unworthy. So he's coming in another couple generations. But he's a Targaryen bastard, and that's who we think the Three-Eyed Raven is.
Is this the same like area in the north where Bran met him?
I believe so, and I have two reasons. A, just looks very similar. It's a cave. But also, he's sitting on the same chair, except the chair is smaller. It hasn't grown as much. It's almost as if he has just been sitting in that chair the entire time and just, like, never really moved. So I definitely think it's the same, same chair, and I also think sort of the growth of the tree shows us how much growth of time it's been.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Plus also his physical growth. So let's go look at the next one here, this next image. Here we see him, a better look at him. And just like in the show, like the first time we see him in the show, he looks intertwined with the tree. And then they cast Max von Sydow on the plot, you know, cast Max von Sydow so he can stay up against a prop tree the whole time. So here, I think we're seeing the same thing. Same tree. Is this a kind of weirwood tree that he's attached to? Is that how he's like attached to this network across all of Westeros?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Let's check out the next one. Now, here we get a look that makes him look like a Targaryen, right? He was very young. This kind of lends to the Brendan Rivers thing, because Brendan Rivers was a Targaryen bastard.
Mm-hmm. Of Aegon IV. Mm-hmm.
And Darren, I think you said earlier, he kind of looks like Aegon.
He does. Like his eyes, look at his eyes, look at his haircut. He looks like Aegon II a little bit. So he looks like he could be his.
So we've never met Aegon IV. Aegon IV is
He has not been born yet. He won't appear in this show. He's later on.
Was Jon Snow Aegon VI or the 7th? I think he's the 7th because Rhaegar's son, his first son was the 6th. He had two Aegons.
Oh, right.
Look, if we're wrong, you can't blame us. The Targaryens are hella confusing, right?
Okay. Look, Alicent got it wrong. Alicent got it wrong. If she gets it wrong,
that's also
it may
true,
be a problem with the system.
If you want to learn more about Aegon IV and some of the other Targaryens, like in between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, I recommend reading A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is a group of three novellas that George R. R. Martin wrote about the Blackfyre Rebellion and like this other period that happened in between these two shows.
Yeah, and it's one I have not read. I'm looking forward to. All right, next one. Let's take a look here. So then we see he's got a birthmark on his face that then takes form as the Three-Eyed Raven. Did Max von Sydow have that birthmark on him, or do you think this is just symbolic of him being the Three-Eyed Raven?
I think it's symbolic. I think it's specifically, it almost looked to me like a portmanteau stain. At least on the screen I was watching, it looked very red. Here it doesn't look quite as red, but it's almost like, for me, he was touching the weirwoods, and this weirwood sap, of course, being red. And that's also how Daemon sees the vision.
That's awesome.
Is that it? Like,
very cool.
Throws down him.
Right. Yeah. And like we talked about earlier, and like you saw in Game of Thrones, the Three-Eyed Raven is basically the ultimate repository of knowledge. Like, if somebody knows what they're doing, like, you can touch a weirwood tree, get visions of the future, but Bran can touch a weirwood tree and just full on dive into the library. It's like everybody else goes to a weirwood tree. It's like reading a book. For Bran, it's like going on Wikipedia and reading as many articles as he wants at the same time. So moving on, let's take a look at this one. Here we get a better shot of the Three-Eyed Raven. What I thought was really cool about this is the camera zooms in on the eye, because it said that the eye itself is what gives the raven extra sensory perception, just like in, you know, mythology, where in certain religions, they say, open your third eye, your eye to the spirit realm. And here we can, so everything we're seeing is within the eye of the raven, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Moving on. So this was neat. This part here, it's like the camera, they kept the camera low to the ground and it's running. This reminded me of in the books when John, because, you know, John and the other Stark kids are all, I call them skinwalkers in the books.
Skin changers.
Skin changers, right. Because a warg, I can't remember the difference between a warg and a skin changer. I know there is like a very fine line between them. Point is, John has dreams where he's a wolf and he goes out hunting because he is inside of Snow's body and Snow's going out hunting. So this reminded me of that. And I thought it was an interesting way to kind of include the Starks in this vision without actually showing the Starks in the vision. Would you guys agree this is maybe part of that?
I absolutely thought it was a warg.
Yeah.
I think you even hear a growl as they're like running, as he's running, you hear a growl. I was watching it with like my big headphones in, and you actually hear a growl. So I immediately was like, oh yes, this is a warg. And then I think the warg is direwolves and like dogs, and then skin changers are all other animals.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
also, and it would make sense like too, something running John. Versus flying.
Go ahead.
Karen, it looks like some an animal that's running rather than flying. Like, I don't think it's the raven. I think it's
I agree. The way it balances too. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, it being a wolf, it could be John running head on toward these White Walkers to fight the White Walkers, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take a look next. Next, we see the Army of the Dead. And then we see a guy who is not the Night King in the next still, but is looks like a couple of the Whites that we saw. Not the Whites. Looks like a couple of the White Walkers that we saw in the original series.
He looks like a second-in-command guy with the long hair.
Yeah,
he
does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we never knew that guy's name. Sorry.
Because
they never gave their names. What dragon is this?
I thought it was Maelys. I could have been wrong. I looked at a lot of dragon images. I personally thought it was Maelys because you can also see other dead dragons behind her. And it's not it's not any of Dany's dragons, I believe. You could see other dead dragons behind her. And you can see the Red Keep like way, way in the background. So I was like, this is like showing the dance of the dragons. And Maelys being the first one who died, that's like all the other dragons around her. They all look a little alike, so I'm not putting money on Maelys, but that is what I thought.
Well, but what you're saying is interesting though, because it, you know, one thing about this vision is it's all metaphor. A few of the things in this are literal things, like the last image of Dany with the dragons, which we'll talk about in a second. That's something that literally happened, but it didn't literally look like that. Right? Dany, you know, we've seen the show. Dany, it's not exactly how she came up and things like that. The eggs were not placed like that when they were in the blood magic and burned. Just like this could be showing Maelys as the first to die, the only one who's died so far, but she won't be the last.
Absolutely. Looking at the teeth and the shape of the jaw, it almost looks like Vermithor a little bit.
Okay.
Just thinking about how we saw Vermithor in the last episode and what he looked like. But I also, I agree. I think it doesn't have to be any one dragon. I think it's more metaphor of just like the graveyard of dragons that will happen because of this war. And the dying of the dragons is really another name that it's called.
Very cool. Next one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in this next image, we see Daemon falling into water. Now, again, like I said, we don't know what this show is going to keep from the books. We don't know if this is all a metaphor, right? Water has so many deep symbolic meanings in literature and in your dreams. Like water symbolizes emotion, being engulfed by emotion. And Daemon is somebody who is always close to his passions. And we're also seeing all of these similarities between Daemon and Aemon, how their names are even anagrams for each other. I think it's interesting that the scene that's directly after this, Helena gives Aemon a prophecy and tells him, hey, you're going to die. And even names a place in Game of Thrones. Now, does not mean that's going to happen. They could be changing things. It could all be metaphor. As we saw in the original series and in the show, prophecy is oftentimes misinterpreted. Like Viserys, for example, right? Viserys clearly saw him placing his son Aegon on the throne. Mm-hmm. And then his son beating back the Long Night. Well, that's not what happened. A different Aegon did that. So I want to tell everybody, even if you've read the books, even if you think you know what's happening in these visions, I don't think any of this is actually a spoiler. So let's move on to the next one. Now, this is important. This is the Red Comet from the start of Game of Thrones season 2, first episode. Darren, can you tell me about this comet?
Yes. So this was the Red Comet, and it was seen by Dany and Stannis and Jon Snow in the original show. And this was the comet that kind of brought the magic back in order for the eggs to hatch with the blood magic. And also it was prophesized that this comet coming would herald like the prince who was promised in all of the events that we see play out in the show. So it's kind of a prophetic incident that's happening with this.
Yeah, and Stannis, you know, we see it over him because Melisandre thought he was the prince who was promised, but really there's like the shots where they show Jon and Dany with the comet are almost exactly alike, like to also show how linked and how they together could even be the prince who was promised. And it's also over Bran as well. Next shot shows us a close-up of the comet, which we never saw. And I thought this was interesting, that they don't just show the comet as a streak in the sky. There's even a shot after this one where then we hear it rumble. It's almost like the might of Westeros, the might of magic is returning to this land. And then that shot goes into this shot of the three dragons engulfed in flames. So this brings up something that I want to just briefly touch on. A lot of people think that Targaryens are immune to fire, Brianna, because Dany survived fires twice. One of those times was from the book. The first one, the second time, George R. R. Martin hasn't even written that part yet. So what is the misconception about this scene where the dragons survive in fire?
Well, there's a thought that they survive in fire because of those. Truthfully, that was sort of a one-off thing. Dragons and their riders are both hurt by fire. Sunfire and Aegon obviously show this. They are not okay. But these eggs specifically, the ones that Dany had, were basically considered inert eggs. They were like not really alive anymore. That's why she was gifted them. And it's also why originally Braavos got to keep them. So I think with these eggs, it was that they needed the fire to hatch and also the blood sacrifice. Because if you watch the first season, the funeral pyre for her husband, Khal Drogo, and it's also then the witch. And both of those burn, and then Dany walks in the fire and she survives that. So the witch already had some like magic sprinkled in there. And then on top of that, the actual just blood magic that's always linked to dragons and their eggs.
So Brianna, thanks for that. That makes perfect sense. Now, then we get this shot and we all know who this is. This is Daenerys with her three dragon hatchlings. Again, not literal. We don't see the people who were there when the dragons hatched. But from behind, he doesn't know this is Daenerys. Do you think like what he's seen here in this vision is the dragons die, everybody dies, and here's the Targaryen dynasty being reborn. Here's hope being reborn. Now, because this shot is followed by a shot of Rhaenyra, do you think that he thinks this is Rhaenyra? Because from behind, it kind of does look like young Rhaenyra.
I think so. I think he probably does think that this is Rhaenyra. Also, I think it's interesting that with both Daenerys in Game of Thrones and Rhaenyra in House of the Dragon, as they slowly become more powerful and more militant, and as they start amassing these armies and this power, they start changing their hairstyle to be more like Visenya, Visenya the Conqueror, who was known for wearing braids.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Because like Aegon had his two sister wives, Rhaenys the Conqueror and Visenya the Conqueror, and Rhaenys would always wear her hair, as described in the book, very kind of flowy and long. And then Visenya was the one who had the sword, dark
that
sister.
Yeah,
that Daemon now wields Visenya's sword. And so she wears the braids. And I think that maybe we're just seeing that come up again, just like this motif of strong Targaryen women with braids. And he probably thinks it's Rhaenyra.
And, you know, in the last episode of the show, too, there's something that I noticed. And I don't know if we mentioned in our video or not, where when Allison's talking to Rhaenyra, Allison, her hair is loose and flowing. She's free. She's finally herself. Whereas Rhaenyra has these, and Brianna, you've pointed this out in our videos, the more intricate the braid, like the more official the person is, right? And when the hair starts to come loose is when you see how they truly are. I did not know that about Visenya. That is really cool. Okay, so this explains the vision. I think I got a good handle on that. We do have to wrap it up. I just want to once again thank you guys for joining me and explaining so much of the vision and the war and everything else. It's been a big help. Again, you can find everybody's social links listed below. So now I want to talk about why it's important that the Long Night vision leads to the downfall of the Targaryens and the big cameo I hope this is setting up.
Yeah, why does the show keep talking about the Long Night and all the frost zombies? Get over it.
Well, because that's what this entire story is all about. It's about the forces of ice and fire coming together to defeat ice zombies. But the reason that Daemon has this vision is less about the White Walkers and more about the power of prophecy. Aegon the Conqueror conquered the Seven Kingdoms because he had a vision. Many thousands of people died because he had a religious conviction that he was saving the world, just as there are many characters in Game of Thrones who have similar beliefs. Daenerys and Stannis Baratheon both believe that they alone could save the realm. So it will be interesting to see how Daemon might misinterpret the vision that he saw. For instance, we know that he saw Daenerys in his vision, but like we said earlier, he probably interprets this to mean Rhaenyra. Therefore, he will commit atrocities in the name of his wife because he believes it's the right thing to do. But what I thought was most interesting about this vision was its ending. Now, like I said earlier, we've seen that Helaena has the gift of prophecy. Throughout seasons 1 and 2, she's often seen muttering to herself,
"Dragons of flesh, weaving dragons of thread."
But you have to wonder, Was she muttering to herself, or was she talking to someone else like she's talking to Damon here? Think about it. To Amond, it looks like she's talking to herself. So what if all these other times she wasn't muttering? What if she was talking to another Greenseer like Alice Rivers? Well, like we said earlier, the Three-Eyed Raven and the Greenseers are capable of looking at the whole span of time and history. And in Game of Thrones, we saw Bran actively engage with the past. It looked as if he called out to his father and his father heard him. And we know what happened to poor Willis whenever Bran warged into his head at the wrong time. So, because this show loves to have its connections to the original series, I think it's going to be revealed that Helaena has been speaking to Bran Stark. So, spoilers for the original series ending. The series ends with Bran becoming an all-knowing wizard king who is crowned the King of Westeros.
All hail Bran the Broken, first of his name, King of the Andals and the First Men.
It's also implied that he is going to continue using his abilities to influence the past, present, and future. For instance, he's going to spend a lot of time looking for Drogon.
And Drogon? Any word?
He was last spotted flying east to
Overland. Farther away, the better.
Perhaps I can find him.
If it turns out that Helaena is speaking to King Bran, then I think the series could end with Bran in the present day. He will have obtained whatever knowledge he needed to find the dragon, and I think the dragon could lead to a new series that takes place after the end of this show. In the past, there was a rumored Jon Snow spinoff in the works, which has thankfully been canceled, but I don't think this story is done being told. There are four continents in this world that two of them we haven't even seen yet. So, would you like to see a spinoff of House of the Dragon that follows the further adventures of Bran Stark? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments below or at me on Twitter. And if it's your first time here, please subscribe and smash that bell for alerts. For Screen Crush, I'm Ryan Airy.